Good morning and welcome to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. We're certainly thankful once again that you have been able to join us as we continue in our study of the Old Testament. In just a few minutes, we're going to be in Genesis chapter 6 this morning. Genesis chapter 6, as now we begin to turn and look at Noah and the events that are leading up to the flood. Before we get there, I do want to remind you that the Brown Trail School of Preaching alumni lectures are going on this week. They are looking at twisted scriptures, those passages of scriptures that are many times misused and abused, twisted out of their context for various reasons, oftentimes to promote certain teaching or doctrine that man wants to push. And so they're looking at those things and trying to put them back into their right context. And so those continue today and tomorrow at the Brown Trail Church of Christ. And you can tune into their live feed at btcoc.com. btcoc.com. They have the live video feed going on there throughout the day if you would like to join in with them. Also, I want to remind you of our upcoming series that is coming February 3rd and 4th. This is our fourth annual Make Me a Servant workshop, and this year we're looking at rekindling the fire. We begin with a session on Friday night at 7 p.m., and then from 10 to 3 p.m., 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., with a lunch provided on Saturday. So I hope that you will make plans to attend and be here with us, and even if you can't be here in Mount Vernon, then certainly encourage you to listen in right here on the Gospel Radio Network, as those lessons will be live streamed from here as well. And so those are a few of the events that we know that are coming up. Hope that you will mark your calendars for those things and certainly want to be a part of them. As we said, we come now to Genesis chapter 6, and we've dealt with some of the genealogies there in chapter 5, and we get back into the flow of the text here as we move on into the account of Noah. Next big account, we've come away from the creation. Man has been evicted from the garden. We've had the murder scene between Cain and Abel. Now we deal with the idea that the earth has continued to grow. Not so much the earth, but the population certainly has continued to grow. We made mention yesterday, as you go through those genealogies listed there in chapter 5. Here we are going hundreds of years down the stream of time, and we're focusing on certain individuals that are being born. But with that, we make the comment there are many others that are being born, and we're not focusing on them. We're not focusing on their families. And so we have a particular stream that we're looking down that is going to lead us to the family of Noah, but there are a whole lot of other people that are being born and also having children, and so the population of the earth has continued to grow, and unfortunately, as we see in chapter 5, as seems is often the case, men have a tendency to drift further and further away from God, and that's what we find happening right here even in Genesis chapter 6, and so let's see that occurring here in Genesis 6, beginning in verse 1 through 5. Verse 1 through 5. It says, "It came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair. And they took them wives of all which they chose. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh. Yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of men came in unto the daughters of men, the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them. The same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown." We look just beginning here, beginning in those first four verses. And we begin to see not only the multiplication, if you will, of the population, but also the multiplication of sin. Many have continued to drift away from God, to the point that God is even going to see there in verse 5 in a moment, that it says the imagination of the thoughts of man's heart was only evil continually. That which man desired to do, that which he longed to do, that which he thought up to do, all of these thoughts were not being directed to God. And here you have a whole generation. Again, we are not told what the population of the earth was at this time. I believe I mentioned yesterday, you know, you can go and you can read a lot of articles about the birth rate and looking even in that particular time when you had the longer lifespans and you had larger families. And, you know, I've seen probably the smallest estimate. Someone said, you know, if you just take the bare minimum that you could even just remotely stretch to the bottom, you're dealing with about 10,000 people. And that certainly, I believe, is much lower than what would be represented in the population of that time. I've seen numbers estimated even up to into the trillion type number, probably large, just trying to support that upon the face of the earth at that particular time with the tools and everything that they had available to them. But it's simply a reminder to us, you've had over 1,500 years now in which this population has been growing. And it certainly has had the opportunity, as the Bible describes here, to multiply. And so men began to multiply on the face of the earth, verse 1, and daughters were born unto them. And it's, again, that reminder, this process of life, birth, death, all of these things have been happening, and the population as a whole has been growing. But now you've had these daughters born. And it mentions here in verse 2, the sons of God saw the daughters of men, and they were fair, and took them to wives of all that they chose. And I believe that last phrase there is very important for us as well. You know, many want to come here and make something almost mystical of this, that there's the idea that, well, the sons of God must have been the angels of God that came down and somehow procreated with the daughters of men and thus created some kind of superior race, and that's the problem. There's certainly no evidence here for that. I believe Moses, as he's writing these things, is simply pointing us to the fact that there are two lines, if you will, that have continued. You've had the lineage of Seth that has continued to the idea that there were those who were clinging faithfully to God. And you have had the lineage of Cain, if you will, those who have drifted away from God, have not kept his will, have not been faithful unto him. And now what you have are those paths crossing. When those who were the sons of God, those who were of that faithful line, decided that they would take unto themselves of wives the daughters of men, those from the unfaithful line, if you will, those who were not interested in following God, those who had not kept walking with him. When you had those that intermarriage of sorts, even in that time, then you have men that were being led away from God, to the effect and to the point that you have a whole generation, a whole population as a whole that has drifted away from God, that has not remained faithful unto him. And it all comes down to the end of that root in verse 2, that they chose wives of all that they chose. Maybe there's an indication here that we could certainly look, and they lost focus on the idea that they should be looking for one who would lead them to walk with God, who was going to be an encouragement to them, that they each would be striving together in that marriage to reach their heavenly home. And yet here was a people that instead were drifting further and further away from God. They put their wants, their wishes, their desires, even to the idea of their lust of the flesh, that it became more important to them to follow after those daughters that were appealing to them, rather than look after the inner character of those women. And so they were led away from God to the point that God is grieved. He even says there in verse 3 that my spirit's not always going to strive with men, for that he also is flesh. His days shall be 120 years. It is true, after the age of the flood, that we're going to begin a rapid decline in the age of man. I don't believe God here is setting an age limit, as it were, but rather he is looking and he is setting a time. I'm done. I'm wearied. These men that have continued to drift away from me are causing me great weariness of heart, and so I will only allow this age to continue, that generation that lived upon the face of the earth, only be able to continue for yet another 120 years until the time of the flood that we're going to see in Genesis chapter 7. And so, if we were to stop right here, God has determined all men will be eradicated. All men are going to be wiped off of the face of the earth. And so here, God has set that time, and without any difference, without reading any further, that's the end of the creation that God has made, at least of the human population here. And all goes back to because men had turned away from him. And we continue reading it in this section. It tells us some more about the giants of that day. Again, I think that's part of why our people want to go back into verse 1 and 2 and read more into it than the Bible is telling us. But simply a reminder, there were giants in those days and there would be giants afterwards. We are going to see even in later times, you know, David's going to be fighting with Goliath. There's going to be those giants. There's going to be those great men that people are afraid of. Even in Numbers chapter 13, as the Israelites are looking into the land of Canaan and are afraid to go in because they appear as tiny in the eyes of the men of that land. And so simply reminding us of the time of this existence, of the greatness, if you will, of men. And maybe too many had begun to trust in themselves instead of in God and looked into their own greatness instead of trusting once again in God. And so that gives us this condition that is existing, and it's not a good one. Here you have those even who were following after God because of marriage relationships, and certainly there's a whole lesson there that we could study and look to, but because they allowed these women, allowed others, if you will, to lead them away. And throughout the Bible, we're going to have those warnings. David allowed Bathsheba to turn his heart in a moment of weakness and sin. Solomon is going to allow his strange wives, those unfaithful wives, to lead his heart away from God. Samson is going to be led away from God because of Delilah and his wife there, that's going to lead him from being faithful. And so those warnings that have developed even here in Genesis chapter 6 and have led them away from God. And what does God think? Well, we've already seen an indication of that there in verse 3, that he was grieved in his heart and he has set this time limit. But let's look again at his sorrow here in verse 5 through 7. God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man with whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made him. Again, we have even greater detail as now we look through here at this grief that has been brought, this sorrow of God that has been brought because of the sin of man. You begin looking and think back to this idea of how God had created man, and he was well pleased after he examines all of his creation there at the end of day 6. It was all very good, and you have that perfect image of purity in the garden there at the end of day 6. But then as you read forward, you see sin destroy that purity, that perfect world between Genesis chapter 2 and Genesis chapter 3, and now the door, if you will, of sin has been opened. That blackness and that destruction has been allowed to come in. Already there is a separation between man and God, and that relationship between Adam and Eve and God would never be the same as it was within the garden. Oh, yes, God could look down the stream of time, and he could see the sacrifice of his Son, and there's a lot we can talk about, even concerning redemption there. But here is God that has already been broken in his heart because of the sin that's been brought upon this people and the separation that it's brought. How much more so has that now multiplied? As men have continued to drift in that direction, they have continued to follow after sin and after the things of this world rather than following after him. And so he is grieved in his heart. There is sorrow. There's even these ideas of regret. Genesis 6 and verse 6. As he saw the wickedness of man and as his thoughts only were on evil instead of on doing good, it repented. It grieved God. There are thoughts of regret here that he even made man. Why did I do this? Now are we dealing with all of these problems and difficulties? And maybe it had been better had we not done this. And so God has made a determination, as he is pained in his heart, that he is going to destroy the living things off the face of the earth. We talked earlier about man. God has set a time limit back in verse 3, but he expands that even now in verse 7. I'm going to destroy man that I created from the face of the earth, but I'm also going to destroy man and beast and the creeping things and the fowl of the air because it repents me that I made them. God is so sorrowful here. He is ready to wipe the slate clean, as it were. He is going to eradicate those that have been upon the face of the earth, and I am going to destroy them. Again, if we were to end there in verse 7, what a bleak picture. Because we're left with that picture, that image of sin, of destruction, of the blackness, of the separation that sin would bring, and we're left really without hope. There's nothing good. There's no good that God has seen or reported up to this point of that generation. But fortunately, as we continue, we have this glimpse into the mind of God that he is searching, he is looking for those who would find favor in his sight. To me, it only adds to the bleakness of this picture, though, that as God looks out, he identifies one man and his family out of however many thousands, maybe even billions of people that may be living upon the face of the earth at that time. And he looks out over them and he finds one man and his family. Ultimately, 8 souls are going to be saved. Because they have found grace, they have found favor in his sight. Let's look there in verse 8 of Genesis chapter 6. It said, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. There was one man that found favor. It's not because God arbitrarily looked about upon the face of the earth and said, I'm going to save that man. I'm going to destroy everybody else, but I'm going to save that man. But we're going to find there was a purpose, there was a reason behind God's choice. It wasn't arbitrary. It wasn't just an eeny, meeny, miny, moe, I'm going to pick you, Noah, and you're going to build this ark. But there was something that God saw within Noah. There was something that God knew of Noah. Here was a faithful man. Noah found grace in the eyes of God because here was one who was continuing faithfully with him. When all the rest of the world and their thoughts were only on evil continually, here was Noah who was still striving to serve God. Here was Noah that was still striving to do that which was right. Friends, I want to suggest to you that there are a lot of lessons that we can learn through this chapter, and there's a lot of good things we need to learn about Noah. He wasn't a perfect man. We're going to find that through the course of our studies as well. He was by no means perfect. He's still pointing us forward to the need of a Savior. Noah's not it. But nevertheless, there are a lot of things that we can learn about Noah, and one of them is, even if everyone else in the world turns against God, we need to continue faithfully. Revelation 2:10, even though you are faced with great persecution, even though it seems that everyone around you may be willing to give up or to give in, nevertheless, you remain faithful unto God. You stand with Him. Be not weary in well-doing. As we read in the New Testament, we need to continue faithfully with God. And so God is going to pour out, as it were, He's going to show His grace upon Noah. Noah and his family are going to be saved, and He's going to reveal unto Noah the means by which that's going to be accomplished, because it's because of what He knew Noah was. He knew what Noah would do. After all, God knew the hearts of men. Again, let us keep reading as we learn about Noah, as we learn about this man in verse 9 through 13. It says, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations. And Noah walked with God. And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. God's going to tell Noah of his plan. He's going to tell Noah what is going to happen, because Noah has found this grace. He has found this favor. But as we look here, we're going to find that Noah was this just man. Back in verse 9, he was a lawful man. He was a righteous man. It's also going to tell us Noah was a perfect man. He was entire. There is integrity. There is truth. We oftentimes in the New Testament think of the idea of fullness or completeness. This is Noah. Again, we're going to suggest unto you, as even as we look forward, we're going to find Noah was not a sinless man. Noah was not the answer to sin in the world. But nevertheless, Noah was one who would find favor in the sight of God, because Noah was one who was set on doing that which was right. That's the beauty that we can see within Noah. That's the example that we can look unto him. Philippians chapter 3. Verse 16 and 17 there, as we can talk about marking those individuals that are following God and setting them forth as an example to walk after, such is Noah. Here was one that should have been looked up to and probably was ridiculed in his life, especially after the events. As Noah begins to build the ark, I have little doubt that there was some scoffing and some sneering at Noah and what he was doing in building this giant vessel. But nevertheless, Noah was going to be faithful unto God. You want to know why Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord? Verse 9 through verse 13 tell us. Again, it's not this arbitrary choice. It's because God looked at Noah. He looked at his life. He looked at his faithfulness. And here was a man, we're told in verse 9, he walked with God. Isn't that the wonderful description that's given unto us of Enoch? The man who walked with God and was no more, for God took him. Noah walked with God. In the New Testament, we're instructed that we are to walk in the light as He is in the light, 1 John chapter 1 and verse 5. Well, here's Noah who was trying to walk with God. Here's Noah who was trying to be faithful. Here's Noah who was just and upright. I think even of Job, he had a similar description given of him in Job 1 and verse 8. man who was just and upright and perfect in his generations. Here was a man who was striving to do those things that were good and right and wanted to be pleasing unto God, and he's going to live that out in his life. He imitated, he walked with God. And here we also have his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, the three sons that we're going to see joining him on the ark with their wives and Noah's wife to make up those eight souls. But again, we have that contrast, verse 11 and verse 12. The earth was corrupt before God. It was filled with violence. And as God looked, it was corrupt, and all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. They had turned from God. But yet, because Noah had found grace, he found this favor in the eyes of God, God's going to reveal unto Noah his plan. I'm going to destroy the whole earth. I'm going to destroy those living creatures off the face of this earth. But I have a plan. Noah, if you'll walk with me, if you'll do that which I instruct you to do, I'm going to save you. I'm going to save your family. And so we begin to have this plan, this pattern that's going to be revealed by God, this instruction that is revealed unto Noah as to how his family is going to be saved in verse 14 through 16. Make thee an ark of gopher wood. Room shalt thou make in the ark, and shall pitch it within and without with pitch, and this is the fashion which thou shalt make of it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits, the height of it 30 cubits. A window shalt thou make to the ark, and in a cubit thou shalt finish it above, and the door of the ark thou shalt set in the side thereof, with lower, second, and third stories shalt thou make it. And so here is the pattern that God is delivering unto Noah. Here is what you are to build. The cubit was, in general, the idea of an arm's breadth, I think is the right word to use there, but basically from the elbow to the fingertip, which in general we can find was about 18 inches. We have found such things as Hezekiah's tunnel, which is measured in a number of cubits, and you can measure that, and it works out to about the same. And so roughly we're safe in assuming about a measurement of 18 inches here. And so when we work that out, we have an ark that's going to be built that was set, 450 feet long. 450 feet long. It was going to be 75 feet wide and 45 feet tall. No doubt a massive structure that Noah is building. But Noah's doing this, and he's doing it in a time in which there's no indication rain has ever fallen on the face of the earth. We're told in the creation that there was a mist that was growing up out of the face of the earth, and it was watering the earth. We're told that there were waters above the earth, but no indication, no writing has ever been made of rain. And so many have assumed, very likely even unto this point, there was a tropical universe that existed upon the face of the earth, and rain such as we know it had never occurred. If that's the case, it strengthens the faith of Noah even more, that Noah, you need to go and you need to build a giant vessel. You need to go and you need to build this ark, because I'm going to send a devastating flood upon the face of the earth, unlike anything that has ever been seen, unlike anything that man has ever experienced or ever known. And even though you've never seen it, I need you to prepare for it. And Noah's ready to go into action. We look and we find this giant structure, and here is a structure that God is going to use, and he's going to use it for a purpose, not just the saving of Noah and his family, but also to the saving of the animals. And a lot of work has been done. I invite you to dig even deeper. We have two. I think it's one was first one was built over near Holland, but just recently the Ark Encounter that was built in Kentucky, I encourage you to use those resources. Go by. I haven't made it yet, but I hope to. Go by and see that and see the giant structure that was built. And they have done work. Apologetics Press has done work. Christian Courier has done work. Focus Press has done work. Many have done work and have written articles describing the size of this vessel and the three floors that would be within it and the volume of this vessel and how when you begin to look at that and you consider the animals that Noah needed to take within the ark and the possibility that he could take animals in their youth and, you know, you begin looking at all of these things, it's not impossible. In fact, it's very possible for God, for Noah to do exactly as God had instructed. And that's what he was going to do, and that's what would happen. So many have tried to deny this story, this account, because they want to say, well, Noah could have never fed the animals of the earth upon the ark. Well, it was possible, and Noah would do exactly as he had said. And so I encourage you to dig even deeper into that level of study. But notice here, God is giving some specific instructions. He doesn't just say, Noah, I want you to go out and build a vessel to the saving of your house and of these animals. He comes to Noah, and he is very specific. You're going to make an ark, and you're going to make it of gopher wood, and you're going to make it with these rooms in the ark, and you're going to pitch it within and without, and you're going to make it to this length and this width and this height. These are detailed instructions that Noah is now obligated to go follow. But I would also suggest to you these are detailed instructions that, based on the character of Noah, he's going to follow without question. He was the one that found grace in God's sight because he walked with God. And so when God told him or gave him an instruction, Noah was going to be ready to do it. He was going to go forth and he was going to build this ark just exactly as God would say. Does Noah argue with God? Well, I'm not sure gopher wood is going to be the best resource. Maybe there was another tree that was more plentiful. Maybe there was another tree that Noah said this would be an easier wood to work with. There's no indication there. Noah would simply go forth and do that which God had instructed him. He would do it. He didn't argue with God and say, well, I think there ought to be four floors instead of three. God said make three. He went and made three. Noah would do exactly as God had said. And oh, so many great lessons throughout the Old and the New Testament that point back to that example of Noah. Friends, we live in a religious world where too often we want to question God. I'm not sure that's the best approach. I'm not sure that's the right answer. I'm not sure God really meant what is recorded there. Friends, would we be like Noah? To receive the instructions of God and do it, to follow him. We have before us the New Testament, the covenant under which we live today. And so many want to argue with God or set that aside and follow their own will when they need to be like Noah and follow the pattern that God has given. More specifically of the tabernacle and the ark that Moses was going to build, that also was given according to a pattern. And the Hebrew writer is going to look back and argue those things were a shadow of what was to come. And so it was important they were built according to the pattern because they were based on something that was coming. They were based on something that was going to be even more permanent. They were not the pattern. They were a shadow of the thing that was to come. Noah, you're building an ark, and I want you to build it according to this pattern, according to this instruction. I want you to follow the will of God. That's the wonderful example. That's the character we see of God. And to what point? Why are you going to build this? Why are you going to follow my instructions? He says in verse 17 through 21, this is his reasoning, God's reasoning. And behold, I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die. But with thee I will establish my covenant, and thou shalt come into the ark, thou and thy sons and thy wife and thy sons' wives with thee. And of every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort shalt thou bring into the ark, to keep them alive with thee. There shall be male and female, of fowls after their kind, and of cattle after their kind, of every creeping thing of the earth after his kind. Two of every sort shall come unto thee, to keep them alive. And they shall take unto thee of all food that is eaten, and thou shalt gather it together to thee, and thou shalt be for food for thee and for them. And so further instructions concerning this plan. Noah, here's the reasoning behind this ark. Because you and these animals are going to go into it. And when the flood comes, you're going to be safe. And we begin to see, again, the importance of this pattern, because what God is telling Noah is when you and your wife and your sons and their wives are safe within the ark, everything that's outside of that ark is not going to be safe. Everything outside of that ark is going to be lost. It's going to be destroyed. But you're building this ark to the saving of your house. Follow the instructions that God has given you, and you will be safe. Consider again, even there, what God is saying. I am making a covenant with you, verse 18. Here is my promise unto you. If you do as I have said, you will be safe. Oh, again, that's the beautiful lesson that we see throughout time. It goes back to the garden. If you would do what I said, you would be safe. Don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of the good and evil. No matter what allurement Satan's going to set before you, it's not going to turn out good for you. They didn't listen. Here's God again speaking to Noah. Here's a place of safety. If you will do that which I said, it will go well with you. And Noah does what is good, and his family is saved. You go through the stream of time, and you can look at the house of Rahab. And here in the destruction of Jericho, Rahab's told, you and your family, whoever is in this house, who's ever in this room with you, and you mark it with the scarlet thread, you're going to be safe. We'll bring you out to safety. When you look at, even backing up just a little from that, and the Passover and the lamb's blood upon the doorpost, and that's going to be a house of safety, and God's going to pass over. He's not going to destroy the firstborn out of that house. It's a place of safety. I've established my covenant with you. And then you pass into the New Testament and you see the beauty. Here is Christ. Here's a place of safety. And if you're in Christ, you enjoy every spiritual blessing. If you're in Christ, you can look forward to an eternal home with God in heaven. There's that place of safety you need to get into and stay in. Noah's building an ark to the saving of his house, a place of safety that God had given pattern and design for. We're going to see that similar theme come up again and again. But God has given him his promise, his covenant, and he could trust in him. More details will be given later, but Noah, you're going to take even with you of a selection of the animals that I've created, of all the living creatures. You can't take everything, but you can take all of the species that are able to once again repopulate the face of the earth. And so God is looking forward to rebuilding, if you will, not the earth as a whole. Yes, the form's going to be there. There's going to be great destruction. There's going to be great loss. But Noah and these animals and his family are going to exit off the face of that earth, and they're going to be the seed to restart, to replenish the face of the earth. And so even in the face of that destruction, there's hope. Noah and his family. And then I want to focus there on verse 22. You see Noah going to work. Thus did Noah. Simple statement. Thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he. Oh, that goes back. Here's the pattern. Here's what I've revealed for you to do. Now go and do it. It's not a time to argue with God. It's not a time to try to change it. But Noah sets about to do the work of God, and what a wonderful example once again for us. God hasn't told us to go and build an ark. He hasn't given us that promise that he's given unto Noah. He hasn't given us that command that he's given unto Noah. No one else was expected to build an ark except Noah. But you know what? When God delivered the law on Mount Sinai to the people of Israel, this is what I want you to do. I don't want you to build an ark. I want you to follow my law. That's what they were expected to do. When Christ comes and he delivers his covenant unto man and he reveals it, not just through the things that he's spoken and would be recorded, but even through the apostles that were guided by the inspiration of God and his word was given to us in written form, this is what I want you to do. Now go and do it. Follow the pattern. Follow God. Be like Noah, who walked with God. Here's Noah that's going to do it. And remember what was said back at the beginning of this chapter, verse 3. It seems from the time that God comes to Noah and he tells him to begin working, Noah, there's going to be 120 years. But don't wait. There's no indication here that Noah waited. He went and he did God's will. You know, again, I don't want to stretch this to any absurdity, but maybe Noah decided, you know, that's a long time, 120 years. Maybe I'll put it off. And he turns around and all of a sudden 100 years are gone and he's got 20 years to go in and build this giant vessel. Maybe he wouldn't be ready. Every indication is Noah set about to do the work of God. Noah did this, again, as we look at this chapter, he did it in a wicked environment. The thoughts of the world were on evil continually, is the description that's given unto us. And yet Noah set about to do the work of God. When there were so many that were set against God and against doing his will, there were many that maybe even ridiculed Noah for the thought, what are you building? We've never seen a flood like you're talking about. And what are you talking about? Eradicating everybody from the face of the earth, and I don't know, maybe Noah built this vessel out in the middle of a field, and maybe they were joking at him, but Noah, there's not even any water around. But Noah knew God's instructions, and he was going to follow them, even when no one else walked with him. Even when nobody stood by his side, except maybe his family, who also probably bore the brunt of some of that scoffing. But Noah did what was right in the sight of God. You know, I think of even of Noah as Jesus would talk about him in Matthew chapter 24. It speaks of judgment here. And Matthew 24 and verse 27. But in the days of Noah, so also were the coming of the Son of Man, for in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. Now, I don't want to focus on the events of Matthew chapter 24 there, but think about what's being said of Noah's day. Here was Noah that was going about as a preacher of righteousness, and yet the people about him were not listening to him. They weren't heeding the warnings that he was sounding forth. 2 Peter 2 and verse 5, it speaks there of God saving Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly. And what were they doing? They were continuing as they always had. Here was Noah saying, God's going to destroy the world. Here's Noah that says, you need to turn from your evil and your wicked ways. But he stood alone. No one else got on the ark with him. No one else was willing to change. No one else was willing to turn. No one else was going to find that grace in the eyes of God. And yet, even though he stood alone, he kept working. He kept proclaiming. He kept preaching. He kept doing that which was right, regardless of what was going on around him. It'd be easy to look at Noah and say, well, he was a failure. He didn't change the world that was about him. But you know what? He stood against a world that was full of wickedness, and he remained faithful. Number one, that gives credit to Noah. But then also, here's Noah who had his family with him. Let's not forget the most important thing, the charge that's given unto us. Yes, we need to go forth and preach the gospel unto all the world. But our first and foremost charge comes at home. Fathers, bring up your children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, Ephesians 6 and verse 4. That's what Noah did. Again, maybe one could look and say, well, where's all the details of that? Well, consider this. His sons didn't leave him. His sons didn't mock and ridicule. When it came time to go into the ark, they went into the ark. They were willing to follow their father. That suggests to me they stood with him. And so you have Noah who is standing there to the saving of his house, to the saving of his family, even if all the world is lost all about him. Noah was going to stand. That wonderful description is going to be given of Noah as we go into Hebrews chapter 11. This look back onto his life. And we're going to have here this great hall of faith. And we've just read that instruction in Hebrews 11 and verse 6, that without faith it's impossible to please God, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. And right after that statement, we have Noah. Hebrews 11 and verse 7, by faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet. Again, I would give you that as that possible evidence. I've never seen possibly never even seen rain, but I've certainly never seen a flood like the likes of what God is talking about. I've never seen anything like that. But God said it's coming, and I trust him, and I'm going to get ready. And so, by faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. Oh, I love looking through the book of Hebrews in chapter 11 there and look at those action words, even just in this one sentence. By faith, Noah was ready to act. He was ready to listen to God and do his will. And so it says he was warned. He listened to God. He was willing to hear what God would have to say unto him, even when maybe it seemed far out, magical, different things that he had never seen before. Warned of God, he moved with fear. That faith was now ready to go into action. He believed God. And what did he do? He prepared. He prepared an ark to the saving of his house. He put this into action, not only to save his life, but to save the life of his family. Are we willing to act to save our soul and the souls of our family? That even in a world that has gone so wrong that we could look in our own time, nevertheless, I'm going to stand with God, walk with him, and live faithfully. Encourage my family to do the same. And there, when he was willing to do that, he condemned the world. Did it matter what Noah's opinion was of the world around him? Not a bit. What Noah thought of the world around him wasn't going to change the judgment of the world. But what condemned those of the world around Noah was that Noah was going to follow God and they would not. Who is going to be able to stand up in the day of judgment and say, but God, it was impossible for us to know your will. God, it was impossible for us to know what to do. God, it was impossible for us to live faithfully to you because of the world in which we lived. And there's Noah. And humbly, Noah can say, but I did. It was possible. Who of us wants to strive to stand up on the day of judgment and say, God, it was impossible for me to live faithful to you. God, it was impossible for me to know truth in that environment in which I lived that was so caught up in postmodernism and denying even the very idea of truth. And God, there was no good influences around me that I could know truth and follow truth and imitate them in their lives. And God, it was just too hard for me. I could not live faithfully. There will be those of our generation that will be able to stand up and say, but I did. And there will be Noah, and he'll say, hey, I lived in a time that was worse than yours. For as bad as our world is, I don't think it holds a candle to Noah's day, in which the thoughts of men were only on evil continually. We at least have some good left in our world. Noah will be able to stand up and say, I live faithful to God when it wasn't easy, when it would seem that everybody was against me. And so don't say that it's impossible. Will we be like Noah? Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. I want to focus on one kind of concluding idea as we think about Noah. And it also reminds me of the idea of personal responsibility. Ezekiel 18:20, the soul that sinneth, it shall die. The idea that's throughout the New Testament, that we are to go into all of the world and proclaim the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be condemned. Mark 16, verse 15 and 16. It's that idea of personal responsibility. We've already hit on it some, but that's certainly a lesson we learn of Noah. Noah was not condemned with the generation that lived all around him, and the generation that lived all around him was not saved by Noah. You see, they were judged on their own merits. When we look, we come to find that same idea as we look through the New Testament, and we look through our pattern even today. We're going to be saved or we're going to be lost based on the things that we do. Not what the world around us does, not what others about us are going to do. We're going to be judged on what we do. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, Paul speaks of this, and he reminds us in verse 10 that we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. Friends, I've got to answer for myself, for what I've done, what I've said, and you've got to answer for yourself. Yes, it's on me to preach the gospel. Yes, it's on me to sound forth the warnings into the world. It's up to you what you do with it. I can't answer for you. Noah couldn't answer for his father. Noah couldn't answer for his brother. Noah couldn't answer for others that were about him. He had to answer for himself. He chose to be faithful unto God. You've got to decide what you're going to do in your life as well. Will you be faithful to God? When you stand before him in the day of judgment, will you be found in the place of safety? Well, it's not going to be on the ark floating on the water as Noah was. It's going to be in Christ. For those who are in Christ Jesus, we have an advocate with the Father. We have one whose blood cleanses us from sin. We have one who will stand with us and has prepared for us a home in heaven. Oh, I want to be like Noah. I'm not going to build an ark, but I'm going to be faithful to God and know that he cares for his children. We, even today, can find grace in the sight of God. He's shown us that grace in his Son, Jesus Christ. And so I want to be in that place of safety. And what we'll look at tomorrow as we move into chapter 7 is we begin to see that flood coming. And now is where we begin to hit some sections here. We're going to look at chapter 7 through chapter 9. We're going to look at that place of safety as the flood comes and the promises and the rewards that come even after it. And so Once again, Lord willing, I hope that you will be with us. Continue learning from these great lessons that are recorded for us, even in the pages of the Old Testament. And once again, thank you for joining us. Hope that you'll stay with us right here on the Gospel Radio Network.